The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. As I was listening to that minute 20 long introduction, I was perusing through the Wall Street Journal, found this interesting. Young hires of 2023 are ill-prepared. How do I do that? Remote learning left students short of basic skills. Of course it did. I find that even with our company, when we hire young folks, it's sometimes a challenge. So anyway, it is what it is, right? Bad actors in theaters have left moviegoers annoyed. Employers cut off insurance coverage for obesity drugs. I could make an entire show of just the headlines in the Wall Street Journal each and every week. How about this one? For the Pope's visit, 150 confessionals with no waiting. It shows a bunch of priests lined up outside in these little cardboard cutouts doing confessionals. So anyway, if you got to get something off your chest, that sounds like maybe a good way to do it. Going to have a fun show today. Of course, we had the downgrade by Fitch of the U.S. debt, which sparked a market sell-off. And I basically told people the day that it happened, yes, I have memories of 2011 when S&P dropped our rating. I think it was in 2011. And what happened right after that? Well, the S&P had a rally of 18% that year. So you never know. In fact, bond yields continued to drop whenever the S&P downgraded us. So somehow, some way, the world doesn't care. All right, let's talk a little bit about a few things, and then we're going to get Hot Rod on the phone to talk about just what kind of mess are we in financially as a country. And I'm going to continue to hound and preach and try to convince you to do the right thing for you and your family, and that is to get out of pain, get out of the addiction of not paying tax now in your retirement accounts, get out of the addiction of delaying tax to the future when we know that we're only, you know, 10 years away or less from Social Security only being able to send you about 77 cents of every dollar promised. We're already spending half of our money on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, interest on the debt, and that's only getting worse. We've got to deal with this issue, so we're going to be talking with Rod a little bit about that. Not that we have anything to say about it, but if we can inform you and educate you, I believe you know how to vote, right? And if we can get folks in office that are willing to take a hard stance and I've got a couple things and not just go with the flow, which I know sounds easier said than done, but that's what we need. And usually it's a coalition of people that have to take this stand to make some real change. And it sucks whenever you have to make this hard change. But the longer we wait to deal with these issues, the harder and more painful the solutions will be. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of that in just a few minutes. But let's look at last week before we get into this week. Friday, we had a big surge to kind of push stocks into good positive territory last week. That was all ignited by a cooling inflation gauge closely tracked by the Federal Reserve, because they kind of look at a few different numbers than what everyone else does. Stocks were flat, though, for most of the week. We had a bunch of earnings reports. We had the interest rate hike. We talked about that last Thursday. But after beginning with gains, stock lost momentum, followed by that Fed's expected rate hike announcement on Wednesday. A bounce on Thursday sparked by positive mega-cap tech companies that kind of revived and rejuvenated things, and bond yields did go up. Stocks recovered on Friday on the release of the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index, that's a mouthful, which fell to its lowest in 2 years, which might indicate a slowing economy. I love this one because I told you this whenever they first came out and said this. The Fed said a long time ago, we expect to be in a recession by the end of 2023, right? Well, part of what drove this market up was the fact that we had solid earnings reports from several S&P 500 companies, and The expectations of a recession were high coming into the year, but last week were pretty much erased because the Fed said, hey, we no longer forecast a recession, period. That's pretty interesting. They had a bunch of key economic data points that came out last week and a bunch this week as well. So we are hot and heavy into information, and I've been encouraging people to do a few things, you know, and I'm going to talk more later in the show. But if you are looking at your accounts and you say to yourself, okay, that wasn't fun going through the 2022 and really, you know, any downturn, and we don't like it. And now you're looking at numbers, you're like, hey, I'm close to where I was back at the end of 2021, and maybe I'm getting ready to get ready to do something, maybe it be retirement. What should I be doing right now to get ready to get ready? So we'll get to that later in the show, and then a lot of other things that you're going to need to have on your radar as well. All right, the show, of course, this segment's brought to you by my friend Lance at the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family that peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. Make sure you have this right statute in your power of attorney to allow your POA to act on your IRAs and retirement accounts. So if you haven't had an update on a power of attorney, let's say in the last 5 or 6 years, and I had one just brought to me that was fresh off the press, and did not have the proper statute listed in the POA, so we sent it back to the attorney, and you know, and they fixed it, no problem. But you should have those documents reviewed and looked at occasionally. Kenny Bland Auctions, they have a really great sale going on right now. I think Thursday, today, is the last day they're taking bids on a piece of real estate. I actually peeked at it. And go visit them. They have a great website, KennyBlandAuctions.com. They're your full-service auction service, of course. And they're friends of mine. I only allow friends of mine or people that I trust to advertise on the show. If they came to me and said, hey, we want you to advertise this, and I had a personal experience with them, this station and me align our values very closely together, great people, and they would understand if I said, you know what, I just don't feel comfortable having that person or that entity advertising during my show, they would actually say and have said, okay. Unrivaled Electric, this is a good one. Tim, he is specializing in generators and solar arrays, veteran-owned, Unrivaled Electric. They want to be your electrician like they are mine, and man, have my generators came in handy this year. I told my wife the other day, it was super hot outside, just boom, electricity went off down the south side of Bloomington, and within seconds, the generator popped on, we were fully functional, and she said, oh, I just got a notice from the power company that something was on a line and restore power by 9 p.m., and this was around 5:30 or 6 p.m., so, you know, we enjoyed 3 great hours of power. And while others were suffering. So it doesn't take a lot. I mean, it depends what you want to run on your house. You know, that's something I had to face. How much do I want, what I want to have running? Well, of course, your freezers, refrigerators, things like that. Do I want my heating and air? Do you want your outdoor lights? Do you want everything? Well, there's a generator for you. All right, that's enough of that. We're going to take a quick break, come back, get old Hot Rod on the phone. Fitch downgrades America from its rating, its highest rating, to one notch below. I think it's more about the message that's being sent than anything else. We'll be right back at Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Of course, the downgrade of the U.S. debt sparks a market sell-off, and then one day, NASDAQ turns worst one-day decline in months. Bond yields surge, but very temporary, as I predicted to those that were listening on that Monday or Tuesday, whenever it happened. So, Rod, I think, to me, it's more about what they said than what they did. Because, obviously, going back to, I think it was 2011, maybe, when the S&P downgraded our debt, we only turned around and had an 18% increase in the S&P that year. We had bond yields continue yields continue to go down. Didn't have much to do with nothing, really. Just kind of shrugged it off and went on. But I think it's interesting when America's credit rating was dropped by Fitch, that they basically said that we are citing an expected fiscal deterioration over the next few years and a high and growing general government debt burden and the erosion of governance. Man, isn't that a big mouthful of stuff to say? But I think it's what needed to be said, and hopefully people are paying attention.
Yeah, most certainly. I think from a market reaction, you're kind of dead on that. You know, in the immediacy of the release, hey, it's a great excuse to potentially take some profits in a year in which you're up extremely large. So, you know, it's more psychological than anything else. Obviously, everybody wants to feel comfortable that the United States government is the safest haven in the world, and that their government bonds is the top of safety when it comes to parking money into an investment of some sort. In all reality, that hadn't changed. The government's not in any jeopardy of defaulting on their debt. I have zero concern about any of our clients' exposure to treasuries. Warren Buffett himself came out this morning and said every Monday they buy billions of dollars worth of treasuries because they're just parking their cash in 3 to 6 months. And he said next Monday we'll do the same thing. The only thing that will be considered is, are we going to buy the 6 month or the 3 month? So from that aspect, no, there isn't any great concern there. But like I said, psychologically, it does do some damage to some people in which they feel as though that, oh, gosh, maybe there's bigger problems out there than we think. And I'm talking more that retail person that's always nervous about the market anyway and feels as though the deck is stacked against them and it's impossible for them to actually get in there and get ahead within the market. You know, that's the biggest impact. But I think you're dead on what Fitch basically said, and I unfortunately don't have confidence that anybody in D.C. will listen and do something about it. But really what they basically said is get your house in order.
You're a mess.
Yeah, tax revenue has grown, but guess what? The expenses have grown faster. And you can't just continue to have that increasing gap between the tax revenue collected versus the expenses that have to be paid out on a year after year basis. And then you throw on top of it the magnitude of the debt that we have, and with where we're at now on interest rates, holy cow, every time those bonds roll, and remember, when they roll, we're not retiring debt, we're just reissuing debt to cover the debt that just matured off of it because we have a spending problem, that interest expense grows enormously. You know, at one point in time, we were servicing our debt at less than 1%, at 1%, at 1.5%, 2%. You're no longer servicing that debt at those levels anymore. You're now talking 4 or 5% interest expense on that. So it most certainly is more a factor of governance that needs to address this issue more so than it is truly market related or something in the market that is going to have a huge sell up or something. Outside of the fact, like I said, you're up yesterday through yesterday's close of business. You're up 17.5% on the S&P 500, 33.5% on the NASDAQ, the Dow Jones, which was the lagger this year, 6.5% on it through yesterday. So to use that announcement to say, hey, you know what, I'm not going to be greedy. I'm going to take some profits off the table. I'm going to wait for a better opportunity to redeploy. Hey, that makes total sense to me.
Understanding how our budget works, how it's constructed, how much revenue we're bringing in, and how we're spending it, I think really is beyond most people's understanding. So let's break this down. If the non-discretionary spending, that's the stuff that we have a little control over, really only represents about 30% of the budget. The rest of it is money we've already promised. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and of course we have to pay the interest on our debt. So my opinion would be, let's focus on Medicare and Social Security. Let's fix that problem. How do you do that? It's a payroll tax. So you're going to lift the cap on what you have to pay into Social Security from the 170 or something is now, maybe to 250. That pretty much fixes the Social Security problem for a good amount of time into the future. Medicare, you know, it already maybe you means test that a little bit. And that is where right now it already is means tested. So if you make over a certain amount of money, and keep in mind, over a certain amount of money, it's not have a certain amount of money, but make over a certain amount of money, taxable income, then you could pay up to 4 or 5 times what everyone else is paying. So instead of maybe 160 or 170, you might pay 500 plus per person. Well, they might say, you know what, we're going to take a look at your assets. Remember I talked about the 5498 that's being reported every single year, just did a podcast on it, on your retirement accounts, and it says right at the top, this is information being provided to the IRS. All they get their 1099s, they get your 54.98. They get the 990s that your employer provides them for your retirement plans. They know how much money you have. They know how much money you got in the bank. And anyway, I say, you know what? We've made a decision that if you have $5 million, $10 million, we think you can pay $1,000 a month for Medicare rather than make it income-based. And then, you know, so these are the things that aren't in my nature to say, you know, I'm going to pay more than I have to so you can pay less. But you got to come up with some fix. And I'm not saying these are the right fixes, but I'm just saying they got to be creative. And then you say, okay, we fixed those problems. Now let's look at our discretionary spending. I get so frustrated, and not just me, but the people working, like let's say at Crane, their fiscal budget, it runs from September 30th, I think, through, you know, September 30th. And that last month, the people that are in charge of spending the money have to spend it. And they spend it on stupid stuff, or they overpay for stuff, or stuff they don't need, because they have to spend it. Why? Because if they don't, when they go back the next year and ask for the same amount of money for their budget, guess what? They say no, because you didn't need it all last year, and or more. You go back and ask for more. So that's just one example. But there's so much waste. I think about, you know, and some of this is opinion, some of this is math. Okay, so I know the theory about opinions. We all have one. They all stink. But think about like the Department of Education. Can the states not handle a good majority of that? There's so much bloat in government. And I always joke with Dan at our office, who's my brother. He's our CFO. I said, you know, we're always adding stuff. We're never taking stuff away. I said, I feel like the government. We're always adding this, adding this, adding that. We're never taking stuff away. So every once in a while, we'll sit down and say, okay, what are we paying for that we haven't used, haven't been, you know, utilizing? Let's get rid of it. It's almost like cleaning out your closet. Our closets at the government level are never cleaned out, Hot Rod. And at some point, someone honest has to stand up and say, guys, we're in a real mess here, and we've got to fix this mess. And maybe for the next 10 years, if we do this and we do that, and we're a little, you know, we have to maybe have a national sales tax of 10%, or we have to raise your income taxes from this to that. But at the end of 10 years, and we promise with that, we'll have a balanced budget. And at the end of 10 years, we're not going to increase our debt load any longer. We'll be at $50 trillion in debt, and we're going to try to peg it at that. Well, guess what? That's fine, because then if you're not adding more debt, if you can now inflate your way out of it by saying, okay, what if we have 3% inflation? Well, I didn't do the math on this, but it would basically say that in about 17 years or so, $50 trillion would feel like $25 trillion because you basically cut it in half, almost in half. So, you know, that could be a solution, but we need to have an honest discussion with America, and we need to be honest with ourselves about the problem that we've had. And this is not... You know, Trump's problem, Biden's problem, it's not Obama's problem, it's not Bush's problem, it's not Clinton's problem. It's all of our problems that we've created. I mean, there's a piece here that I had from last week. On the day President Joe Biden signed the legislation that ended the debt ceiling debate, that was on Saturday of June 3rd, our national debt was $31.467 trillion. On Thursday, 1 month later, just 33 days, the U.S. national debt increased to $32.47 trillion. So it increased $1 trillion in 33 days. From our nation's inception, from 1776, July 4th, it took 205 years until 1981 to reach $1 trillion of debt. So this thing, you know, I understand there was some pent-up supply demand, blah, 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 from the debt ceiling kind of getting reached back in January. But an increase in our national debt of another $1 trillion in just over a month is staggering. So my solution to this is I'm not running for any office. I do know some people in Congress. I do know some senators. But these are questions I bring up to them, and I'm going to have a chance to have a face-to-face with Aaron and Mike Braun, and, of course, you know, all my buddies that I know up there, and just ask what's going on with all this. So what can you control out there? Can you control all this? No. But you need to be prepared for the fact we're less than 10 years away from Social Security basically saying, sorry, we're only going to pay you 77 cents on every dollar. And more than likely, like we did back in 1983, we're going to wait till the very last minute. Social Security was in a complete crisis back then, and it took Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill, right at the last minute to put a rescue bill together, and that's when your Social Security ages went up. That's when taxation on Social Security started. That's when the bump 8% per year if you wait till you're 80 or till you're 70 came into play. Bang. they can fix the problem, but they need to do it sooner than later. So if you're sitting on $1 million retirement account, $2 million retirement account, $500,000 retirement account, or whatever it is, and you haven't paid the tax, you've got 2.5 years left at the current tax rates to do something about it. And Rod, I was talking to Glass on Wednesday about some of this stuff, and he said, man, he said, I need to call you before you get on the show to kind of get you fired up, because he was joking that this stuff fires me up big time. All right, so Rod, I'm going to have you hang on. When we come back, I want to talk more about the markets, because we talked about the downgrade and got my rant out of the way, which I was really excited to do. And by the way, folks, I wrote none of that down. So if you want to re-listen to it, you can always head over to WGCLradio.com, go to your podcast, whatever, and say, clip that out and send it around to people, because the more people that understand what's going on and, you know, get behind this, the quicker we're going to solve some of our problems. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hey, Brad, rarely do I talk more than you do during a segment. I think I finally beat you in one segment. So here we are. You mentioned the big numbers with the S&P, the NASDAQ, and, of course, the Dow kind of hanging in there. By the way, last year the Dow just crushed the S&P. You know, S&P was on 18 and some change, and Dow wasn't nearly down that much. So, you know, that's just the way it goes. That's why you need a little bit of both. You need some equity income. You need some growth. The combination of the two, they work really, really well together, because you never know when one's going to be in favor and one is not. So here we are in the middle of earnings season. So far, so good. We've talked about interest rates. The thing that's been really crazy, Rod, this year, and then I want to talk about what to look for in the second part of the year, is the volatility. Now, granted, volatility tends to be low whenever the market's doing well, and then when the market sells off, it tends to pick up. But this year was weird, because when we were having the sell-offs, the volatility was low. Now we have the market, you know, it's been on a pretty good rally here. It's still low. I was taught when I was a young guy, following the Charles J. Gibbons methodology, that there was and I'm going to talk about this in a little bit, so you won't have to comment greatly on this, that interest rates matter, and interest rates matter in how the market goes, and interest rates have been really high, so it doesn't make any sense that the market would be on such a good rally. Price-to-earnings ratios are out of whack. You know, we talked about this some last week, that it just doesn't really make any sense. What's your view of where we are today and what we have to do as an economy or whatever to at least sustain where we are and not go backwards anymore? And what are some of the headwinds that you might see facing us here in the next, 3 months to 6 months down the road?
Sure. Well, I think one key, and you kind of brought it up there, that is a little bit difficult to figure out where it's at, is last year, supposedly, growth stocks were being sold heavily because they don't perform as well in a high interest rate environment. Well, we have a high interest rate environment, and all of a sudden, the growth stocks are what are leading us this year. Not only that, your price-to-earnings multiple on the S&P 500 is greater than what it's been for the last 5 years, in which you had zero interest rates until the last year and a half, when the Fed got really aggressive in doing that. So the bulk of that five-year average of your price-to-earnings multiple was developed with low to zero interest rates in that. And all of a sudden, 1 year later, now we don't care about interest rates hindering growth. Now, I'd kind of said all along that, hey, technology will still perform well, maybe not as well with higher interest rates, but they'll perform well because technology will be a big part of what solves some of the problems that we were having within the system that helped add to inflation, that we're adding to some of the logistics problems. So it isn't as much that I'm fearful of a higher earnings multiple in any market, regardless of where the interest rates are at. It's what is the growth that you have to look forward to into the future, because you can always grow into that high earnings multiple.
Right.
And at least here in the very short term, that's where the concern is. So I gave Glass the scorecard on Monday when we were about 55% through the S&P 500. You know, your year-over-year earnings per share is negative 7%. So you have an earnings per share decline going on right there. Now, thankfully, revenue year-over-year isn't, and revenue is an important number because earnings per share can be adjusted, can be, I hate to use the word manipulated because I'm not talking about any sort of fraudulent activity, but obviously if you lay off 10 workers, well, guess, and you sell the exact same product or service, well, you just made more money. So your earnings went up, but is that sustainable for you to work with fewer people and still be able to continue to do what you were doing? So that's where my concern is in the near term, earnings are still declining slightly. Now, will that go on forever? It will not. It will return. You'll begin to have earnings growth once again. But rarely do you see new bull markets begin with price to earnings ratios at the beginning of this year, sitting around 18 or 19. Now you're up over 21 with where you're at. That low volatility, rarely do you see new bull markets begin with volatility down around the 13s or 14s, which is where it's been predominantly all year. You did have a spike about 2 weeks ago on a sell-off where it jumped up to 17. This week, yesterday's sell-off, and then this morning's open that was down, jumped it back up to right around 17 again, but it is, as the day has gone on, we have clawed back some of those losses and volatility has come down. Look, America's a very resilient economy, and we're still the best economy around the world from the standpoint of innovation and you know, research and development and all of those things, whether it be in technology, whether it be in healthcare. So I don't have long-term concerns that the economy is necessarily not going to do what it needs to do to power forward and get us out of this. I'm just concerned that maybe some investors, because they haven't ever invested in a market that didn't have the Fed so heavily engaged, just automatically assume that if the Fed's not raising rates, that means the market's off to the moon. And that doesn't necessarily mean the thing, because at some point in time, fundamentals do matter. You can't just constantly rely on loose lending standards and low interest rates by the Fed to drive the stock market forward. At some point in time, you've got to actually look at revenue. You've got to look at earnings. You've got to look at where the economy is at, jobs-wise, unemployment-wise, debt-wise, all of those types of things all filtered together to say, hey, we're at a good valuation, we're slightly undervalued, we're slightly overvalued, and those are all of the things that right now just seem to be a little bit out of whack in the short term.
Real quick before I let you go, you and I were talking about the power of widening your lens slightly. A lot of folks hook on to that December 2021 value. And now if you're putting money into your 401k or at work, you're probably already, if you were in the S&P type stuff, you're probably back to even or now even greater. But those that have not been putting money in, it's likely that they're not back to where they were at that high point. But if you widen your lens out a little bit, maybe to 3 years or 5 years or whatever, you're probably still doing really, really well on a year-over-year basis. But, Rob, we were talking about the value of keeping it simple, staying the course, not getting wonky and crazy and trying to chase some new trend, because, you know, people do that all the time. Advisors do that too. But you and I said we had a good discussion about learning from the mistakes of 2008, 2009, and how important it is to just be, I think keeping it simple is important, and I think that's the approach we've taken, and not overly diversifying, because sometimes you can overly diversify. You want to be well diversified, don't get me wrong. You want to have the right mix of stocks and bonds and different types of stocks, like I mentioned earlier, but it definitely pays to just keep it simple, stay the course, and not get too nutso whenever you have conversations like we're having to say, oh my gosh, you know, Rod's super way overvalued or this or that, and then make a big change based on that. Make changes based on your circumstances, like what you're doing, what you're going to be doing, and the fact that we have had a recovery. Maybe it's giving you a chance to kind of reset some of your thinking, maybe reset some of your goals, maybe reposition a few things. Because, Rod, I know you and I talked about this, I think just a couple of days ago, that there are mistakes that everyone made back in 2008, and that was good lessons that we learned way, way back then that we are not doing it again, right? I'm going to let you go with one last comment.
Yeah, most certainly. And, you know, and you bring up an excellent point with all of that you say, from the standpoint of, you know, we believe in risk management as one of the most important things we can do above and beyond performance management. Not because performance isn't important, but because we believe that if you own quality companies, you own them for the long haul with good quality management, probably a leader within their sector, that performance will take care of itself over the long haul. That if you just own that quality company, it's all going to look good. The other point I'll make, and I've made this point with Glass, that while I haven't trusted this rally and I haven't felt that we were starting at a good place for it to be long-term sustainable, we've made no major changes to our clients' portfolios because of what I just said. We own quality companies. We didn't lease them. We didn't rent them for a quarter or a half a year. We plan to own them until we see better opportunities elsewhere, or that company no longer, we believe, is a quality company or a leader within their sector. And then we'll make some changes. So, yeah, some of the changes, maybe we took profits this year on some things and redeployed it someplace else, but we most certainly haven't been avoiding the market because we didn't think that it made complete sense fundamentally where we're at and how strong this rally has been. We're fully participating, and we enjoy this rally. It would just be nice if you could look at it and say, oh, I understand why we're rallying. We've got, you know, low valuations, or we've got exploding growth, or, you know, any number of different things. It's just right now, this is one of those years that's kind of wonky. And when you look at the fundamental data, if you hadn't been watching the market, you'd probably come back and say, yeah, the market's probably, you know, flat and maybe even down a little bit based on what I see here fundamentally going on in the economy. And obviously that's not the case. So yeah, that's the biggest thing is you do want diversification, but not over diversification, and own quality, and don't try and time it and jump in and out and get overly cute. Own good quality companies, good quality managements, leaders within their sectors, and own them for the long run until you see better opportunities someplace else, or it's time to make adjustment because you're beginning to near a milestone, whether that be retirement or whatever, and you need to make an adjustment within your allocation because you're heading into another phase of your life.
Rod Holloway, everyone. Listen to him on Glass in the Afternoons, both on Monday and Friday, on Big Show Friday. So, Rod, thanks for all your help, and I'll see you back at the ranch.
Sounds good. Have a great show, Dave.
All right. What were some of the lessons I learned as a young man from my mentor, Charles J. Gibbons, back in the late 80s, early 90s, on how I wowed an economics class at Indiana of my understanding of interest rate cycles and how I punched someone in the face by mistake? I got a lot of fun things to talk about. When I come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I was reading the Wall Street Journal today, and I'm always trying to correlate things, right? Like correlating this with that. So things that we always believe were true, and then we find out maybe they're not, right? That happens all the time in our lives and our worlds. And I was reading an article, and I'm really setting this up for somebody when I do a presentation on convincing them why. But Procter & Gamble or PG&E, cuts tree trimming, once seen as a key to fire protection. So people are like, yeah, we're going to trim the underbrush, we're going to trim trees, and that's going to help prevent fires. And there's a whole big article about why that maybe is not true any longer. Well, there's a lot of things we've always believed that are a fact that end up being maybe not so true after many, many years. But one thing that I learned when I was a young man, so basically you guys know if you've been listening for a while, I graduated Edgewood High School, played quarterback there for 3 years, went to Greenville, now University, to play football. Didn't make the traveling squad for the first few games, and I was interested in learning about money. Didn't even really know what that meant, but I had a real interest in learning about money, mainly because I didn't have any, like many of you listening, and we didn't have any money. I wanted to learn how to get it, make it, keep it, manage it, whatever. So there was this guy like a Dave Ramsey, somewhat of that era. His name was Charles J. Gibbons, died of pancreatic cancer in 1998. And he was advertising how to learn about investing, debt management, taxes, everything. And I'm like, I'm going to go. I went to St. Louis. It was only about less than an hour away down to St. Louis and went. And I remember dressing up. I had a suit on and everything because I didn't know. I showed up. There was probably 300 people in this place. It was a free event. And, I mean, he started going through some of this stuff. And I'm hooked. I mean, dude, I am hooked hard. I had a little bit of money because I was at college, but not much, and it was $600 to buy all of his books and tapes. And I remember buying them, and I listened to them nonstop. I read it all, listened and listened and listened and listened until it just became ingrained in me. That's when it became my epiphany that that's what I wanted to do for a living. I wanted to help people learn about money, how to make it, how to manage it, right, how to spend it, all that kind of stuff. And it was fantastic. So Zig Ziglar once said, "I'll never change your life from the stage, but if you buy my books and tapes, I have a shot." And honestly, it changed my life, and I still have them. And if you attend my workshop at Ivy Tech, Taxes and Retirement, on August 10th, coming up soon, I'll have those with me, and I will share that story in more depth if you happen to come. So I retired from football. I never used the word quit. I retired from football, and I moved back home. I enrolled at Indiana University. I did all this before I even told my dad I was coming home. Called him, and I said, "Dad, I'm coming home." He, you know, choked a little bit, and I said, "Don't worry. I've already enrolled at Indiana. All my credits are transferring, and I'm going to do it." So I did it, and that summer I got into the Indiana University School of Business. I went to Kelly before Kelly was cool, when normal kids like me could get in. And, so we were in this class, and this guy was teaching, and he was kind of a cocky grad professor, and he says, "So why do interest rates matter when it comes to stock?" I raised my hand. I stood straight up, and I said, "Well, we have an investor decision line. And at some point, there's a decision that I'm willing to make as an investor to get out of the stock market and move into fixed income when the yields are more attractive and the risk is then decreased." He looked at me like, "Wow." And everyone looked at me around, right? Well, anyway, real cute girl was sitting next to me. I never knew her name. And I remember later, as we were leaving, people were actually asking me questions, and I was putting on my jacket, and my arm was stuck, and it slid out really hard as I was trying to get through it and punched the girl right in the side of the face. So that ended that potential relationship. But it worked out fine because I met my wife-to-be about, 6 months later, and that was the end of that story as well. But it's still true today. The benefit of owning stocks over bonds keeps shrinking because as yields go up, you know, 5, 6, and maybe a little bit more, people say, "You know what? I think I'd rather take some of that bet and get out of this risk-on bet, and I'll be happy with 5 or 6% with the majority of my money or some of my money." And that's happening. And that's the thing that kind of worries us a little bit, because the gauge of stocks' relative value to fixed income has fallen to a two-decade low. And typically that indicates a declining stock market. So once again, this reset in the market value has given us a real opportunity to kind of get ready to get ready. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, don't let sequence of return risk cook your goose. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Running a little shy of time, but that's okay. I've always got next week to talk about some more things. I'm going to have two podcasts. Marty Belcher, you're a friend of mine, Marty James. And I know Marty Belcher listens to the show, so if you know Marty, great guy, taught over at Harmony School for many, many years. So Marty, that's your first official shout-out here on the big show. But there's a thing called sequence of return risk, and when I talk about sequence of return risk, I talk about why does it matter when you retire? Why does it matter to protect yourself from having bad returns early in your retirement? Well, because it can cook your goose. There's so many examples that I have that says, okay, I have accumulated, now here's my money. And then I retire, and I decide to take systematic withdrawals out of my investments. You name the number, 3%, 4%, 5%, it doesn't even matter. But I retire in a bad market, like 2000, 2001, 2002, when the market dropped like 46% over 3 years, and I'm pulling out 4 or 5%. So now I've taken out 15% over 3 years. My market value dropped 46%, and I'm on the way to zero pretty darn quickly. But what happens if you retire in a different period of time where maybe the market goes up 10 and 15 and 20%? It could be the exact same returns over a 15, 20 year period, but one where you flip it around and say, okay, these were good returns to start, bad returns at the end. This is bad returns at the beginning, great returns at the end. It can be the exact same numbers. Your average return could be exactly the same. But in one scenario, you run out of money quickly. The other one, you have tons of money at the end. I got a great piece on that. It's better illustrated in person. and I think I do some of this in my program on the 10th at Ivy Tech. The way you register is, I think, is on Facebook. So if you are on Facebook, you can register. If you want to learn how to come, go to cfci.us, contact us to say, I want to come to the Taxes and Retirement Workshop that David's doing. I think right now, honestly, we have about 80 people already registered. Now, this doesn't cost anything to come. So a lot of times when we have 80 people registered and there is no skin in the game where they've paid, you know, 30, 40 bucks to come, they don't show up because it might be really nice outside. Maybe my plans have changed. I'd rather go, you know, golf or eat or whatever. So then that happens, and that's fine. But we normally prepare for the best and hope for the best as well. But, yeah, I've got a great example of that. So if you ever would like to see, well, number one's in my book, 2025, The Final Drive, I talk about it. But I've got a great piece from Kiplinger that you could read. And if you'd like a copy of it, just let me know. Again, same way, cfci.us, contact us. I want the Kiplinger article, and I will send it to you because it is really, 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 really good. And if you read by page 3, if you're not convinced that you need to utilize where we are in the market and where rates are, fixed income rates are, and you don't get ready to get ready by lining that first 10 years of income up at least with essential or contractual type of income, you're not going to be convinced by me or anybody else. So that's about it on that. Don't have a lot of time. So I'm going to take another quick break, come back, wrap up the show. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hey, once again, you know, the show replays Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. Everyone knows that, and that's a very popular time for this program to be listened to. On WGCLRadio.com, it's always there, and past shows are there as well. It does go up into the podcast world on Thursday evenings after the show airs, and if that's the way you listen to it, great. But listen to that first real segment that I did today, because it does matter. It does matter that you know what's going on, you know how much money's coming into the American coffers, you know how it's spent, you know what the problems are, you know there's a fix if someone would have the courage to stand up and do it, and pay attention, because your vote matters. I know it seems like it doesn't sometimes, but it does matter. So listen to that segment, and please pass it around, because people need to understand and need to hear it. So there we sit on things today. So anyway, if you'd like to have that sequence of return piece, let me know. If you want to come to Taxes and Retirement, let me know. And we're going to have a great program over at Ivy Tech on the 10th of August, because your next opportunity won't be until October. By the time we get to October, you know, now we're going to have, you know, 2 years and 2 months left before the bell goes off and tax rates at least go up for good. There is some rumbling around that they might extend some of these brackets that are in that 24 or 22 and lower a little bit longer. There is some rumblings that the standard deduction may stay as it is, because it makes sense that now only 14% or something like that of Americans actually file an itemized tax return. It's made life a lot easier and simple. So there's a lot of stuff cooking, and I'm really looking forward to my fall conferences coming up, because we should know a lot more about the 529 rules, you know, as it comes to beneficiaries and rolling to Roths and RMD rules and all that kind of stuff that will start really, really taking effect starting next year. So once again, as always, Jimmy Emmon Jr. is back in the house, and he is going to be helping me really line out some shows, some guests, and bring it for you guys for the remainder part of this year. So have a great weekend, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.